And now, a personal favourite of mine, stay right here for another instalment from Documentally.
I'm on a boat, and I'm not alone on a boat. I'm with Gordon, or Evil Gordon, on Twitter. You may or may not know him and his fascination with outdoor tech, indoor tech, beer. What else are you into, and why are you evil?
I'm into lots of things that begin with B. So bread would be another one, definitely. Brown drinks, also. I'm a big fan of brown drinks. And the Evil Gordon thing is, it's really dull. It's a reference to Homer Simpson, who is actually one of my heroes.
Fantastic. And yet you look nothing like him.
I try and work out, yeah. And not have jaundiced skin, yeah.
We're looking very similar, actually. Two beardy blokes who've just spent the last 24 and a bit hours on a boat, bringing it back from me having had some work on it. How was the experience?
Well, it was my narrow boat. Is it this we're calling it? A narrow boat. You popped my narrow boat cherry, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. First lock within about, what was it, about 10 minutes, 15 minutes? Yeah. And I had to, some old geezer sort of told me what to do and what not to do, and yeah, no, it's been good fun.
So that was it, and you were a natural. After that, it was a doddle, and I think that you should seriously consider spending more time on the cut. I'll let you know if I've got any big adventures coming up, because you ran around like you wouldn't, not the slightest bit tired.
I wanted to get my steps in as well, you know. I wanted to gamify it.
But we're recording this because you actually wanted to interview me, didn't you? So I should probably give you the microphone. Let's have a conversation around some of the things you wanted to ask me, because you do a bit of writing as well.
Yeah. So the tables turned.
Here's the mic.
So my first question is, who is Documentally?
Yeah, interesting. Bios change all the time. The ideal, like me, that I would like to be more than anything else is a kind of a compassionate, curious writer who is paid for doing what they love. I say writer because I cringe when I say I'd like, you know, like to think of myself as a professional storyteller. At a time when it's almost everybody wants to do that or is doing that in some shape and form. So just telling stories, helping other people tell better stories, which sounds like I'm trying to avoid the word marketing and consultation. I do all of this stuff because at the moment I'm passionate about it. And I'd like to do more of that.
So would it be fair to say that you're a bit of a digital raconteur?
Yeah. Raconteur is a nice word. I love living slowly in a world which enables you to do everything incredibly fast as well, though. So as much as I think I've gone through the phase, and it was quite a long phase of being a tech utopian, I realised that I was fascinated in the potential of what the tools could do and had no idea of what kind of world we might be building around this when you think about how journalism just hasn't been able to evolve. And I come from a newspaper photographer background who saw what was going to happen and decided to go freelance. And now we're seeing that the advertisement revenue is just twisting how news is not only made, but how the truth is being redressed as something else or doesn't even get a look in. So I'm very cautious now. I'm less of a tech utopian, but I'm still as passionate and curious about all of this stuff because of how much good it could do in the right hands.
And it's sort of fair to say then that you've been quite progressive in your sort of view of how these various technologies can sort of progress getting sort of stories out there, and that I sort of say that your stories are quite, a lot of your content's very experiential in its sort of focus. Is that a fair assessment?
I see money as experience credits. So experience and having an experience of sorts is always what I will invest in. And it's very easy for me to share my experiences because of the way I use the technology. So it seems to be, I don't think as much as you probably think I do about these things. I think it was Bill Thompson once like said to me in conversation, don't forget the shape of the story is the shape of the story and not the shape of the platform. And I love that because I have a certain way of telling stories. So for me, I prefer audio above everything else because the world is so filled with people wanting to share their stories. We're being asked more and more to look at screens and look at more screens and look at more screens. And I was reading an article about how we're approaching peak screen. We can't possibly look at screens anymore. So we're going to have to adjust technology so that we have micro screens delivering information. Well, what happened to those hearables we were promised, where subtle little notifications or sound effects would let you know that there's an important information relevant to where you're standing or what you're doing? What's happened to hearing in all of this? Because when I'm monitoring my podcasts and I'm learning whilst walking or driving, I'm able to see and focus and still do so much. So I love that there are so many different ways to tell a story, and it's quite easy for you to find what fits the person you're trying to reach or the person you're trying to inspire, or if you're trying to sell some stuff. There's so many different channels that you can use, and finding that's like a bit of a puzzle and a really interesting adventure to go on.
That's really exciting, because essentially what you're saying is that listening is... it doesn't get in the way of experiencing other things or doing other things, whereas, say, watching would. So you can listen to music and cook, for example. But you can't really watch something and cook, can you? You know, and by listening to something, if someone seems to me, if you're listening to something, you're less likely to be being sold something.
Telling a story should be sharing an experience, but creating a shared experience at the same time. When you switch off, and they use that term for good reason, switch off in front of a television or a monitor, you've become a passive ingester of that message, and quite often I think a lot of the brain shuts down and doesn't necessarily interact with it. There is obviously interactive content out there that makes you think, and yet delivering someone a story, this cliche of the theatre of the mind, where I could tell you a story right now and you would bring the characters into your brain and you would give them flesh and you would personify a lot of that, and you might even dip into personal experiences. When I say an island, there's a particular island you love, you're creating that world, you're creating that universe and experiencing the story as I'm telling it you. So I think audio can be much more interactive than we give it credit to, because we bring it into ourselves. It's much easier, I think, to carry an emotional narrative. There's all this talk of make people feel something. You've got to make people feel something. And what we're doing is we're shocking them. We are enticing them with there's some cheesy tagline saying, you know, you're never going to believe these five things about absolutely nothing at all. And that's super easy and lazy to do. How about making people feel something that resonates deep inside them, like with their soul, if you want to get hippie about it? Audio for me has pros in the way that you can carry the emotional narrative. If I had I was going to interview four people, or I was doing an audio drama to tell a story, and there were more than four characters, it's difficult for the brain to say, that's Bob, that's Kathy, that's Judith, that's Sally. So video does kind of work better for that, or graphic novels, or all the other possible channels that you could use. Statistics also can be a little bit boring unless you've really wrapped them up good and tight in a tasty story and delivering one at a time. But infograms, very visual. So there are pros and cons. The stories I want to tell to make people feel something and go, oh, do you know what? I can do that, or I should do that, or I could do that, or this has opened up a whole new perspective for me. I prefer to deliver in audio, and everybody keeps talking about the podcast revolution, and now they're saying the podcast revolution has started waning. The podcast revolution that happened recently was about lots of people getting shed loads of money and monetizing their podcasts. We still haven't even begin to explore, in my opinion, how social audio and the audio narrative can be shared for people who kind of aren't maybe focusing on the money side of it quite as much as the corporations who are investing in this are.
And do you think that this sort of immersive, emotional content helps us experience things better? It can like lend to our experience of, say, being at a place or consuming something or enjoying something. You know, we've got this additional sort of story wrapped around it.
This shared experience that I mentioned, which sometimes you, I mean, with visually, you very much get it with live streaming, I think enables us to connect with a person. And if they don't feel a part of that journey, a part of that story, they're not going to be invested in it enough. So, for example, when you are doing a live stream video and somebody asks you a question and you completely adjust the narrative to take that in, that shared experience becomes way much more valuable than just, I'm going to be telling you some stuff and you're going to listen. The fact you can do audio-only live streaming on things like Periscope is great, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this kind of interactive podcasting can take off. I quite often just fire up this space and you're basically opening a portal and saying to people anywhere in the world, hey, let's chat and explore something together and let's use our imaginations. Because although I can turn the camera on and off just to set the scene and show you where I am and who I am, what I look like, let's turn it off and focus on the words and the story and the narrative. That's exciting me at the moment as a particular bit. There's been also some other collaborative audio platforms kind of popping up. No one knows how to monetize it yet. Great. Let's not worry about it until we've fleshed out how we can make these connections. And I think that's the key for me. We're born alone. We die alone. And all we have is, like, we can look into each other's eyes and have this kind of feeling that we are on the same track. It's like, how many times have we, and the last day, said, I know exactly what you mean? Because that resonation which we crave and we look for, that kind of connection, has happened between the stories we've mentioned. And we found lots of similarities between the way that we live our lives and how we were actually brought up, for example, that have made certain neural connections, I think, in a world where we are still surrounded by threats, whether it be lies on the internet or crossing the road. There are threats around us. I still think we're very quite animal and are looking for the pack, looking for the tribe, looking for those commonalities.
I mean, we've certainly told each other a lot of stories in this last 26 hours or what it's been, and the astounding
very little sleep.
Yeah, and the astounding thing about that is that, besides on the surface of things like being two middle-aged men of the same year and having similar quantities of grey hair and facial hair, aside from that, you'd consider that if you knew our backgrounds, you'd think we were very, very different people. But actually, the stories that we've told each other suggest that we've got way, way more in common than I certainly knew 26 hours ago. And that's all been established by telling each other stories, hasn't it?
Very much so. And it's interesting as well, because some people will say, you know, you can't really learn anything until you teach it. I think the same goes for the therapeutic effect of telling a story, going through that experience again and having certain things click and resonate with the subconscious, going, oh, that's maybe why that happened. And I'll probably repeat myself, people that know me, you know, I have to say things like, did I tell you the time when, yes, you did, because we had some exceptionally tasty beer last night.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, and I might not drink that many beers in a night, but spread out over the amount of hours that we did and the conversations that we had, I might not remember everything that we talked about because I was so in the moment and I was feeling stuff as much as I was saying stuff and listening to stuff. It's not lost, because I think it had a subconscious connection on me, if that makes sense. I do think there's a lot of therapy in talking about and telling stories to one another.
Definitely. And I'm really glad you mentioned beer, because that's kind of important. Let's then talk about how beer is a social thing. It's more than just a social lubricant, you know, in that kind of sense, or Dutch courage, or whatever we want to call it. Since beer was accidentally first discovered and then turned into a thing, it's been a social instrument. It's sort of been pivotal in our sort of civilization and the formation of these tribes and working out who we belong to and who we belong with. So I'm just like, you know, in your many, many travels, how important has this sort of, and it doesn't have to be beer, how much has this sort of sharing around and a drink or something to eat, how important has that been to you in your experience?
I do think there's different types of drinkers that I've met along the roads. There are people that are literally just chucking liquor. And I picture an alien landing and like walking into the average inner city pub and just seeing these people chucking liquid down their throat and then having to go and get rid of it and then chucking more down. And I'm saying, you know, there's so many better ways of getting off your face. You know, we've got pills, we've got injections, we've got all kinds of stuff you can inhale. And yet, why are you doing this? I've always seen beer drinking and wine and whiskey and imbibing these things as a ceremonial thing. It's weird how you cradle and you might nurture a beer. You want to know its story if you care about this stuff, and that's the people I like to gravitate about. It's not just a vessel with liquid in it. The amount of effort it took to get it there, it wasn't just a piece of bread found in a puddle, which they believe was, I think, the origins of beer. Some fermenting bread was it in a puddle. Somebody has really carefully not only thought about how to package this thing to show you how much passion has gone into it, but there is quite a long story behind it. And if you care about that, I think it makes the actual drinking experience so much more wow. Like the amount of time we were taking over the initial taste of, like, well, that's, you gave me a Salopian yesterday. Yep. First ever time I've had a Salopian. Why was I not aware of this company before I tasted something that you can tell an incredible amount of love had gone into that? And it was also super tasty. And I must admit, because I'm not a massive volume drinker, I like it when the kind of number of how much alcohol is in there is higher than I expected, because it did not taste like it was a real hearty beverage in the alcohol department. It enabled us both to kind of find a space where we trusted each other, or we didn't care that the stories we were telling each other were stuff we wouldn't put on the internet. And that's when a moment becomes special. Now, when we live so much in public and everything is out there, we were talking about and sharing real inner stuff that, you know, let's face it, sometimes a lot of blokes don't talk about, for starters, and I don't want to be stereotyping there, but I do think we're kind of caged and we don't have that mentality.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying the alcohol effect, the effect of alcohol, and the fact that that's a very deliberate thing in beer. It's not by accident that there is a chemical effect, and it'd be wrong to sort of suggest that wasn't important. But as you say, there's this sort of sweet spot when you're having a beer with somebody in which you're kind of loosened up enough to talk to them about things that you should talk to somebody about, but not in a kind of oversharing broadcast sort of way. Mm. I think when you hit that sort of that lovely sociable sweet spot, it's when you can develop a real sort of bond with another human, another living thing. And as a result of that, you know, the world gets a little bit smaller, doesn't it? And you care a lot more about people who you didn't care about before. And if you've got differing views on things, you're more likely to accept the fact that you might not share that view, but you're prepared to accept that that's a perfectly valid point of view, that even though it might be different to yours.
And along the same lines, you care sometimes a little less about the things that were bothering you deeply because you realise you are not alone in that concern. And that's the key. When everything about us is either playing on our insecurities or giving us insecurities, when we are already incredibly insecure beings, think about how insecure we are. How many times do you see, you know, your dog put its tail between its legs and its ears back in fear and insecurity? I reckon it must be a fraction of the time a human does so in a day, when it's like, oh my God, what about that? We just seem to be like embroidered in it. I do know some pretty carefree, normally monks who don't need money and stuff like that, carefree individuals that don't have these issues. And yet for a moment in that space and that time, yeah, whilst you're imbibing and, yeah, of course, altering your brain chemistry, it's a very pleasurable, a very enjoyable, and I'd like to keep thinking it's ceremonial, because ceremonial is something special and occasional rather than, that was really good, I need to do this every hour of every day.
I just don't think that would be possible or desirable. Let's go into, I mean, you've recently come back from the States and a road trip which you have shared, so it's not like it's super secret or anything like that. But, you know, and you've been hanging around with some characters by the sounds of things. You went and had a beer at Dennis Hopper's grave. That, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
The beer wasn't, but it was the only one that was left.
You know,
I
walked 50K in a day during the summer. And at the end of it, we had a San Miguel, and it tasted like champagne. You know, so sometimes, yeah, you know, even a shit beer can be a good experience. Yeah. So, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Fantasy, beer, place, person. Go.
Tolkien.
Oh my God.
In the bar I've never been able to re-find, which was in a cave near Constance in Germany, and whatever it was they served on the day I stumbled upon it when I was almost penniless and sleeping rough walking across Germany, Patrick Lee Firmer style, it was a black pint that seemed more complicated than stout, and every time I have a stout and it's snowing outside, I have a flashback to the moment. But Tolkien wasn't there, but that's who I'd have it with.
Well, I'm just going to say Christian Payne, a.k.a. Documentally. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Tables
have turned. Yeah, I never got much of a chance to ask you about stuff. We've got to hit the road and head out of here. And you give me a quick plug. Should this end up online and people are listening to this, if they wanted beer delivered to their home, once they've booked it in, it's going to be delivered, and they are going to be taken on an adventure which is varied and exciting in liquid form. Where should they go?
Well, you know, I would say you should definitely check out the UK's first, probably the world's first, and definitely the best online beer club and subscription service, which is BeerBods. And you can find us at beerbods.co.uk. That's BODS, as in B-O-D-S, by the way.
And I remember my first box from Beer Bods, and you've got to kind of pace yourself so that you can have this shared experience.
So every Thursday, we'll email you. We tell you which beer we're going to drink. We tell you about that beer. We tell you about the people who made it, because we think beer tastes better when you know more about it. And then Thursday nights, 9 p.m., hashtag Beer Bods. You get online and you tell us what you think.
Yeah. Very, very enjoyable, and really makes you care about this stuff. And we should care about the little things, because then, life is sweeter.
Makes the bigger things less worrying.
Nice one. Thank you very much, man. Cheers. I'll speak to you later.
Documentally.